Hi and welcome to the 10% Club. On this week's show, we are discussing why transfer fees are so big for players that have only got 1 year left. So this show is aptly called Big Fees with 1 year Left. I'm very lucky to be joined by my old friend and agent and mentor, John Print, who is somewhere in Gloucestershire, who knows where.
But in the countryside, Sky, in the countryside.
Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
No, good, good. I want to discuss the psychology behind these situations of why players get into a situation with 1 year left and what clubs are thinking and why the hell are people paying so much money for players with only 1 year left on their contract. Back in 1995, Bosman happened, and then for about 5 or 6 years, there was this madness with clubs worried about players running their contracts down because they weren't going to get a transfer fee or maybe lose them on a free transfer. But now there just seems to be back-to-back transfers where players have got 1 year left and clubs are forking out a hell of a lot of money. I wanted to start firstly with Harry Kane, with Harry Kane's situation. What's your thoughts about Harry Kane, him having 1 year left, Bayern Munich paying a package worth about 100 million euros?
It really surprised me, especially if you look, you know, his season before, a year before, you know, his deal to Man City supposedly fell through for similar amounts of money. Did I think he'd ever go to Bayern Munich? No, I just didn't see it happening. I didn't think Bayern Munich were a type of team that would kind of invest that level of money in a player with 1 year left on the contract. But obviously, Sky, something's changed in the industry, hasn't it? There's the thought processes of directors have shifted, because say 4 years ago, that deal would never have been done. It wouldn't have made any sense at all, would it?
And if we look at Harry Kane, a couple of years ago, a transfer to Man City was mooted. And also what came out in the press, that there was some kind of agreement that the club would let him go. So the psychology of someone like Harry Kane, who has achieved a lot in the game and is a very strong character, obviously, was that, in my opinion, at that time, he decided that he was going to leave and that he wasn't going to sign a new contract. Players have situations where they may have conversations and then they learn a lot from it. And what he learned was he wasn't let go. They didn't let him go. So he played his football professionally and everything. I think a dangerous position for clubs is when they've got a player, the contract's running down, and the club the player's at is not that bad. So they're not desperate to get out. And that was a similar situation to Sol Campbell. Sol Campbell was at Spurs. Yeah. He was living locally. It was a good club. Okay, he wanted to achieve more. But with the Harry Kane situation, he was at a great club, playing in a big stadium, great training ground. So for him, he obviously mentally thought, you know what, I'm not signing a new contract. Why do you think it took so long then for the deal to be done between Spurs and Bayern Munich?
Well, I think, you know, Kane learned a lot from his experience in Man City, where, you know, he was quite public, wasn't he, about wanting to leave. I think with, you know, it's interesting. We can look at, you know, often player power is discussed. You know, and we discussed it numerous times in different forums, Sky, haven't we? You know, this is this myth of player power. You know, Kane was in a win-win situation, really, wasn't he? You know, he could stay at Tottenham for another year, have that kind of goodbye season, say goodbye to the fans and leave it on his own terms and basically choose which club he wanted to go to. Or he could choose to, you know, or if a club came in and had the right amount of money, the right project that he wanted to do, he could take it on. So he was very quiet, wasn't he, this time round? Because I think he had nothing to lose. He could just sit back and see what happens. Now, he could have turned down Bayern Munich, couldn't he? Yeah. And said, I don't want to go.
But what about his age, John? Do you think that he's thinking, if his contract had been structured properly, he could have maybe have gone earlier? Because this is the way I look at it. I look at it that an agent has to structure a player's contract properly. In an ideal world, a player has a say in their career mid to late 20s. Because if they love a club that they're at, they can still go, win stuff, come back, and their legacy's intact. So in your eyes, do you believe that it was a bit late for him to go at the age of 30?
I think it was. I think in a way, lucky's the wrong word, but I mean, I think a deal like that, it could have passed him by. You know, you often say, you know, building a contract for success, don't you? And structuring contracts so that the player does have the ability to leave and maximize the opportunity at the right time. And I think whoever's involved in his previous contract negotiation, just by keep on signing new deals, didn't do him any favors, but it actually did work out all right in the end.
Well, I mean, it's not rocket science to see that, you know, he is a top player with a great attitude. So when you're negotiating contracts with players like that, you have to structure them properly. You have to have a feeling of what the player wants to do. And maybe 30 was a touch late, but he still got to go to Bayern Munich. But if he'd gone to a super club at the age of 26, 27, he would be coming to almost the end of the contract with that club. And then he can look at maybe coming back. I think in his mind, he would like to come back to the club. But it drives me mad when agents, and I'm not talking about necessarily his contract, I'm talking about agents getting paid a lot of money and not structuring players' contracts in the right way. It's not rocket science. You've got to speculate and say, okay, round about 26, 27, 28, you'll have a year left or 2 years left, but you have a say. What's been proven in recent times is that even if a player's got a year left, it's still not easy for them to go.
No, definitely.
Moving on to Declan Rice. Declan Rice, similar situation, a year left. The chairman came out and said, well, Declan Rice had been offered 200 grand a week. Sometimes people miss a trick in that once a player mentally thinks, do you know what, I need to go somewhere to win trophies. Money's a little bit of it, but money doesn't control them.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's like, no, you're right, because Declan Rice was he's kind of at that prime age, isn't he? You know, in terms of, and I guess even with, when you look at Harry Kane and Declan Rice, I know they're different ages, but they are a level of player which is a very, very small talent pool, Sky. There's not many Declan Rices in the market, is there? There's not many Harry Kanes in the market. And that's probably why they're able to, another reason why they're probably able to command these high fees with such short contracts left.
And what is it about Declan Rice that makes him such a great player?
Consistency, probably. You know, he's not very flash, is he? But he's probably eight out of 10 every game. Good, you know, good personality, professional. Doesn't cause any problems off the pitch. You know, a bit of a role model. Fans like him. Makes a lot of marketing sense as well. You know, potential England captain in the making. Lots of positives there.
When do you think he made up his mind that he wasn't going to sign a new contract? Because obviously the chairman said that he was offered 200 grand a week. And when a player makes up their mind that they're not going to sign a new contract, they're not going to sign a new contract. But it's still a long time. A year, 18 months, 6 months.
I reckon you're right. A year or 18 months. He knew that was the time he had to go. And he probably sat down with his advisors and said, look, you know, this is the strategy for you. If you keep on doing these things, tick these boxes, then the time to leave West Ham would be this time. This is the optimum time. This is the time for you to move to a club that you want. So West Ham get the money that they want. Everybody's happy. So you can leave with some respect, I guess.
So at that time when West Ham were offering him a contract, do you think that a conversation was had then where the player said, do you know what, I'm not signing any contracts, I just want to leave? Or is he just saying, you know what, I'm not signing a contract? Because West Ham left it late, just like some other clubs have done, really. With a year left and it's ticking down, and it was risky business because if any of these players decided that I'm staying here, then that would have been a very difficult situation. And I think it takes an incredibly strong character to say, I'm staying. And then at the end of the season, if we don't agree anything, then I'll go on a free. I mean, there's tremendous pressure on players.
It's huge pressure, yeah. Huge pressure. But, you know, nothing surprises you in football, though, Sky, does it? Until that ink is on the paper, on the contract, it doesn't matter, does it? You know, that's the thing. I don't know what kind of strategy they could have played. They could have said, oh, yeah, no, we're interested. Make us an offer and we'll consider it. You know, just to keep all the parties ticking along. Who knows how they approached it? You know, just before I came on here, you know, Sky Sports News, Mbappe's in discussions with PSG for a new contract.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Is it my fault? Football, a week is a long time in football. So when a player decides that they want to do something, there's always a possibility of change. Always. Yeah. If West Ham had got into the Champions League places, that might have affected Declan Rice's decision.
Totally. Totally. He probably would have stayed.
Right. But as I said earlier, you know, money is not a factor for top players when it comes to making a decision about them wanting to win things. Look, yeah. players sometimes outperform clubs, and clubs outperform players. And when a club outperforms a player, then everyone's quite happy with the club being ruthless and saying, sorry, you've got to go. You know, fans will say, oh, the coach is being ruthless, the club's being ruthless. But when a player decides that, I'm outperforming the club, I'm a world-class player, and this is a good club, but it's not competing at the highest level, so I'm not signing a new contract, fans can often get on the back of players. So some players do feel the need to say, do you know what, I'll go with a year left so that the club gets some money for me. But in this case, Arsenal paying over 100 million for him is very surprising, isn't it?
That's really surprising. So it's, when you told me the topic of this, I know I was thinking about, you know, the club's kind of perspective on things. So why did Arsenal decide to spend 100 million on Declan Rice? You know, is it purely for football reasons? Is it a mixture of football and marketing reasons or something else? You know, is that why these prices are becoming overinflated? It's because, like we've discussed before, the talent pool for those type of players is so small. And there's such a demand for those players to make the team work. That's why they're so high. So teams, if they want them, they have to go for them. Or they get left behind.
I mean, it is a case of demand and supply, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so almost having a year left, or what that means is that they could definitely get the player, but they'll have to pay over the odds. Whereas yeah. If the player's got 3-4 years left, the club that holds the player's registration can hang on for a bit. When a player's got a year left, all parties know that the club with the player's registration have to sell the player, but there's still this astronomical fees being paid. It's quite incredible. I mean, does it make financial sense for Arsenal to pay that much money for him?
It must do. They must do the maths. They must do. Because it's really interesting. When you look at all these kind of transfers that are going on around the world, Sky, it's like the world has changed, doesn't it? You know, Saudi Arabia, the PSG scenario, and there's like three kind of reasons that I can put down to why the football transfers like markets change. One is, you know, soft power, sports washing. So we've seen it with Russia. Remember years ago, I think it was 2012, a Russian club made a bid for Messi, didn't they? Which took everyone by surprise. So met the release clause, he could have gone. Obviously, he wasn't going to go to Russia. It didn't make football sense for him, but you know, financially, it would have been a great deal for him. Then we had kind of the China market, which was taking players to a lesser extent, but a larger volume of players. but that kind of disappeared because they ran out of money and COVID happened. And I think the government got a little bit scared about it and put a tax on it. And then we got the kind of Middle East, which has really transformed the money of the world of football, because they do have, it seems, a bottomless pit of money. You know, that all started with the, you know, the PSG move for Neymar. You know, that's a really interesting case, because that release clause was about 200 million and nobody thought anyone would ever come anywhere close to that.
Well, yeah. The thing is, what doesn't make economic sense is the residual values. What happens after the player's contract's done? Let's look at the Declan Rice. I mean, that's 110 million, 5-year deal. His wages must be around 15 million a year. Yeah. So you're looking at 75 million plus the 110, 115 million. I mean, it's close to a £200 million deal. And can they ever recoup that money? At the end of his contract or midway through his contract, will they be able to sell the player for more than what they bought him for? The thresholds in football just seems to just be extended and extended and extended. It's just going crazy out there. The numbers don't make sense from a business point of view. If you've got the Brighton model and you're finding talent and you're paying 5 million for Caicedo and then selling him for 115 million, then that makes sense. If you look at all the players that Brighton have brought in for relatively smaller money and have sold them to the bigger clubs, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
Cucurella, but they bought for small money, selling him to Chelsea for like 60 million. I mean, that's amazing business. So,
but can they sustain it though, Sky? That's the question. You know, we probably a case like Southampton were a team that used to do that a few seasons ago. The amount of talent that they brought in and then sold for huge profits, but they just weren't able to maintain that position in the Premier League. Now, Brentford are doing something similar, maybe on a lesser scale, but they're extremely well run, making profits on the transfer market, bringing players in cheap. You know, it's a great, but can they sustain their Premier League status by doing it that way?
Can you see that? Can you see the Southampton scenario happening to Brighton?
Potentially, because it only takes one change in the structure of a recruitment team, and it can all go wrong. So, if you look at Liverpool and their kind of transfer strategy, for a club kind of dining at the top table, their recruitment strategy has been pretty spot on since Jurgen Klopp's been there. But if you notice this window, since they've lost the key people in their recruitment department, it seems chaotic now. You know, and Liverpool making that British record transfer bid for Caicedo, that's not their strategy. Never has been. So our club's panicking. So that's the inflated price as well. Because the other way, Liverpool hit that fee up for Lavia and Caicedo just because they're interested.
Moving on to Mason Mount. That's a very interesting situation. Mason Mount was the golden boy of Chelsea Football Club. And then all of a sudden, he started to play less and less and less. So there was a trigger point for him where he just felt, you know, I'm not playing here. Whereas his story has been a bit romantic, you know, coming out of the youth setup. Frank Lampard takes him on loan at Derby, and then Frank Lampard gets the job at Chelsea and then plays him. He's playing every week. So that situation was another one where players got 1 year left on their contract, and yet Chelsea got like 60 million for him or something. I mean, did that just surprise you?
Yeah, crazy amount for him. But it's great for Chelsea though, isn't it? Because it's 60 million profit.
Are you saying crazy amount for him because of his level of how you see him as a player?
No, I think, well, 1 year left on the contract is a crazy amount for him. I think if he had 4 years on a contract, 60 million is probably a fair price. You know, that's how we used to evaluate things, Sky.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's how it's changed.
Yeah, for a player like him that was homegrown, it must have been a massive decision for him to just decide, I've got to leave, because football has no guarantees. You know, you just don't know what's going to go on at clubs. Sometimes players leave clubs when they're not getting in the team, and they go to another club, and then something happens there where they're not getting in the team. And then you end up jumping out of the fireplace into the fire. But his one was particularly interesting because on the outside looking in, he just looked like a player that was going to be at Chelsea for life, a bit like Reece James.
Yeah.
And then Chelsea were able to hold out for such a high-level fee. I mean, if there was anyone that could have seen their contract out, it would have been Mason Mount. Because he was always going to be in and out of the team, but he's playing for Chelsea Football Club. Mm. And he's homegrown, and his family must be happy in the area, all of that stuff. And then for him to leave with a year left, when not just him, any of these players, if they would have played the last year out and gone on a free, it would have been, I think all players would like to go on a free. That's my opinion. I think top players would like to be unencumbered and just be able to just choose their club without having to wait for fees and stuff to be agreed.
Oh, it makes it more complicated, doesn't it? No, but financially, Sky, seeing out that contract, is it still, would a player like Mason Mount still make the same amount of money? Because obviously, if there was no transfer fee, could that be factored in? Is that still the case now? Because if the clubs are investing so much money.
Yeah, I think.
I may say, why do I need to leave now?
Yeah. No, John, do you know what's interesting is that it's becoming less important for the player to see out the contract or go with a year left.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if a player's got a year left and they're still getting the level of finance they're getting and the club is getting the level of transfer fee they're getting, if Kane had 3 years left on his contract, Rice had 3 years left on his contract, and Mount had 3 years left on his contract, you would think that the transfer fee was paid for them would be around about the same.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So normally what would happen if a player's got a year left, it becomes a bit of a fire sale to the selling club because they need to get rid of the player. Right? Yeah. But Kane and Rice at 100 million plus and Mount at 60 million, you know, does it really matter whether they've got a year left or 3 years left or 4 years left? The finances just doesn't make sense in that respect, John.
But maybe that's only for those kind of top level players. Maybe the bracket below, if they got 1 year left on the contract, on their contract, the kind of the way that we see it or used to see it would still apply. Or do you feel that that's because of the increase in the transfer fees on 1 year contracts, that's also filtering down to the lower, to those lower levels as well, to those kind of medium ranked squad players, shall we say?
It's interesting because the situation with a player with only 1 year left, it seems to be all stacked against the selling club. And plus, the selling club know that the player has had some communication with the club they could be going to. So from the selling club's point of view, the player's got a year left. The player wants to go to a club and has probably agreed everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, the time's ticking.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like club to club, clubs are happy to pay this money. But if these players went on a free transfer, for instance, let's use Mason Mount as an example. If he went on a free transfer to Manchester United round about now, are they giving him a 60 million signing on fee?
No.
No chance. They're not giving him a 50 million, 40 million, 30 million, right? But they're willing to give 60 million knowing that if they just waited for a season, they'd get him on a free. That's such a swift change to how things has been even 5 years ago.
And is it because these clubs view transfer fees as different? You know, it's money that's just floating around. No one will get money. They get transfer fees floating in. They get floating out. So it's a bit different than actually physically giving it to a player. So it's gone out the system. I don't know if that's a factor at all.
Football's the only business where decisions are being made that aren't commercial.
Yeah.
It doesn't make the laws of economics, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But clubs are massively under pressure to get players and demand and supply. There are so few players available at that level, but clubs decide they've got to push the boat out. And what's interesting as well is the clamour for number sixes. Rice, Caicedo, McAllister. You know, people are just crazy for defensive midfield players. It goes in cycles. There was a time when it was
wing-backs. Wing-backs.
Wing-backs, centre-backs, everyone was going crazy for it. But do you think that it's sustainable that a coach can go to a board and say, we know this player's only got 1 year left, but we need to pay $100 million to get the player?
You'd think it wouldn't be. But, you know, we've had this conversation, you know, is football eating itself? Is the bubble going to burst? God, how many, I think ever since I decided to get involved in the football industry about 15, 16 years ago, they've been saying that. And it hasn't burst yet. I think as the broadcasting deals keep on increasing, the revenues increase, different owners come in from overseas and they're investing, I guess it keeps it flowing. Is there an end to it? It's a really interesting one, Sky, because you from the outside you'd think it wouldn't work, wouldn't you? It's like, what are they doing? Spending $60 million on a player with 1 year left on his contract. Mm-hmm. But Man United is a different proposition because they are on the stock exchange, aren't they?
Yeah.
So that is a slightly different angle. I guess the threat, you know, and I was thinking about this when you mentioned the topic again, you know, the threat is from outside leagues. So if the Middle East really kicks off and becomes a massive talent drain for the Premier League, that's going to impact the Premier League. That will impact their broadcasting deals and sponsorship deals and so forth. That's the problem, isn't it? When it can all fold in on itself.
Well, the school of thought is that some players get themselves into a good position with a year or 2 years left, and then they can have a say.
Yeah. But
it's fair to say that a lot of players just keep signing contracts. And when you keep signing contracts, you lessen the chance of you having a say in your own career. This is what players do. And it's just poor judgment by agents to just keep saying to players, don't worry, just sign a contract. If a club wants you, they'll just come and buy you. Well, that's not true, because most clubs can't afford certain levels of finance.
Yeah.
So if it's just for your football career, then you've got to have a say to go to a club that's good for you. But what's interesting now, John, is what is deemed success in football? What is the pinnacle now? So let's say that a player is strong enough mentally to say, I'm not going to accept the money, because it's always aimed at a player. But if they don't sign a contract, they're losing X millions of pounds, right? That's always put to players. So if a player gets themselves into a situation where they've got a year or two left, and then the club have to sell them, is the ambition now Saudi Arabia to earn this ridiculous amounts of money? Or is it to go to certain clubs in Europe where you can win stuff? I mean, it's a very difficult...
But how many players actually win things, really, in the scheme of things? Very, very small percentage. So some of it has to be, well, I'm playing professional football, professional sport, because that is my job. So, right, change sports slightly. So yesterday I was watching the International Athletics World Championships in Budapest.
Fantastic.
Absolutely love it.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
But there are some athletes there that are trying their hardest, but they're never, ever going to win. And they're really good. They're amazing. But they're never going to win. So they're in it for the job. And they're in it for the money. They keep fit because they want to put money on the table for their family.
And I love that about track and field. I love that.
Yeah. And that is it. It's just on them. So perhaps there are players that they enjoy playing football. They feel it's a privilege. Some of them do, some of them don't. But it is, you know, they see it as a business. You know, for them, because they're not at the highest level, but they can do a job, and when they need players to fill squads, that's the reason they're there. It's a job. So why wouldn't you take a job where you're going to get paid the most money?
Yeah, yeah. Just going back to the 1 year left thing, the psyche of the players now, John, is that the whole point of not signing contracts is to give yourself the opportunity to have a say in your career. But because so much money is swanning around in football, do you think that players may look at it and say, it doesn't matter whether I've got a year left or whether I've got 4 years left? You know, there's so much money swanning around now that I can always go because someone will always pay the money.
And I think that's been the shift in the last 18 months. You know, is it doesn't actually matter now about that 1 year left on the contract. If somebody wants you, they will pay the money. So like we said, 60 million for Mount, 100 million for Kane. I think it's the fear of the clubs. They don't, if they've decided they want the player, it's in this world we're in now where we need instant success. I think the clubs are feeling that pressure.
But we still have a situation, John, where if a club doesn't want to sell a player, and we saw that with Kane, and the possibility of him going to Man City, and the player has 3-4 years left, some clubs will just not sell the player. And that's where the frustration comes in. This is why it's very important for players, the world-class players, they have to have world-class representation. They have to take responsibility for who's around them. And the people around them have to be clever and know how to structure a contract. Because we've even heard stories of players signing contracts and then saying, I want to leave after they've just signed the contract. Agents have to earn their corn. And the way they earn their corn is by structuring contracts properly. We've only seen it with managers and players. We've seen it with managers where a manager will sign a contract, they'll be in a league, they'll get the team promoted, and then wait for the club to look after them. Well, I'm sorry, that just doesn't happen. Anything you do should be in writing and should be structured so that if you get the team up, this happens. If you win so many games, that happens. And the same goes with players. Their contract has to be structured in a way where they get rewarded if they're successful. Players and managers cannot wait for a club to look after them in the way in which they think they should be looked after. And so this is the whole thing about 1 year left, 2 years left, is that it just gives you, it's not about money anymore. Before, if you had a year left and you could get more money, you could get this, you could get that, but no, because the transfer fees are still going to the clubs, to the selling clubs. And when people hear big numbers, sometimes players don't get anything from the transfer fee. Unless they've got a clause in their contract saying that they'll get a percentage, everyone goes, woo, 100 million. But it's not woo, 100 million if the player's not getting anything from it.
No, yeah.
If the player's
getting it, floats between the clubs, doesn't it? Just floats around.
It just goes between the clubs. So the most important thing, I still believe, is for players' contracts to be structured in the right way so that when they hit the mid-20s to late 20s, they've got a year or two left so that they can have a say. There's nothing worse than thinking my career is drifting away, because if a club wants to hold on to a player, a club's going to hold on whether or not the player wants to win stuff. And even if their club is never going to win the league or never going to win the Champions League, they will still hold on to the player. And from the player's point of view, why won't you let me go to go and try and win something? It's because, you know, everyone's thinking about themselves. So this is why players have to find the smartest people around to guide them in their careers and to structure their contracts. Because if you don't structure your contract properly, one day you're going to wake up and think, oh, God, I made a mistake. It's too late. When you're 30, 31, normally, it's too late, except for the great Harry Kane.
always exceptions. But it's like, you know, with Declan Rice leaving West Ham, it's, you know, West Ham, by selling him, get a good fee, gives them a big problem because they've got to replace him and they can't replace him. So they probably have to buy two players to replace him. And the cost of doing a deal is huge, Sky.
They can't replace him even with 110 million, John.
No, they can't replace him. and the costs involved in trying to even get anywhere near replacing him. It's just, you know, they probably think, well, it's probably worthwhile just keeping him for another season.
Same because as we first thought about
it. Because he'll probably keep us in the Premier League and we can, and it makes business sense for us. But, you know, that's probably another reason why they don't want it. And obviously, as soon as a club knows that you've sold a player for 110 million, what happens to the prices of the players? It goes up.
But here's the question, John, right? If you get £100 million for a player with 1 year left on their contract, why can't you just do a Brighton? What is it about Brighton where they can find the next big stars and other clubs can't?
It's their scouting system, isn't it? It's their network overseas. And also, it's their willingness to take a risk on players. And to understand they're not going to be the finished article when they arrive. You know, wasn't it Casado come and it wasn't anything special. They sent him out on loan. It took 3-4 years for him to develop. Comes back to that thing, isn't it? It's like instant gratification that fans want. And, you know, Man United probably signing Mason Mount because they decided, right, he's the player we need. If we wait until he's a free agent, there's probably going to be another 10 teams interested in him and we may not get him. You know, that's the thing, isn't it?
John, if me and you were running a football club, which clubs, which we always talk about, which club's model are we following?
Brighton, Brentford. I would say Southampton, but not at the moment. But their recruitment strategy was for years has been superb.
What I just can't understand is that if you've got all the finances in the world, then you haven't got the excuse of not setting up an amazing recruitment situation.
Mm.
I just don't get it. Many people probably can't get it. Like, why is a club paying over the odds for a player that is deemed to be playing at the right level, as opposed to Brighton going out there and finding players and paying relatively smaller amounts of transfer fee, and then everybody's saying, "Oh, right, we see that player now." I don't understand why the bigger clubs can't recruit players in the same way a Brighton did or a Leicester did back in the day, Newcastle did back in the day. You know, why is it that some clubs only wait for players to play at a certain level and then pay 100 million or 80 million or 70 million for them? Antony at Manchester United is an interesting one, where Manchester United have paid 70, 80 million for him, and he's yet to show the Man United fans that he's worth that kind of money.
Mm. It is baffling, isn't it? It's really, really baffling. Because you'd think all the top clubs would have the best scouting networks in the world. And they'd be seeing these young talents early on, but they just don't. So I guess that's where these clubs like Brighton and Brentford gives them a chance, doesn't it? Because they have money and it makes them lazy, I guess.
John, or go and buy other people's recruitment teams.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's going to cost less than the money.
Probably really would do. Yeah. Yeah. It really, really. But then it's really, if when you're at that kind of top level, can they wait 3 and 4 years? Is it the right grounds for these players to develop properly? Now, can they make mistakes?
Yeah.
Do they have time to make mistakes? I don't think they do. So I think that is kind of part of the reason as well. They need that finished article,
yeah,
to go straight in and to make an impact. Because it's like Chelsea. If Chelsea, you know, were their model at the moment,
What is their model?
Their model is to get around financial fair play. Their model is to offer players very long contracts to try and entice them. But if they don't get in the Champions League this year or next year, it's just not going to work. You know, they are relying on that Champions League money. And also to keep, but the loan market for them has changed as well, because they're the changes in the rules in the international loans. Means that, you know, the amount of players that they can actually send on loan has reduced considerably. So that's kind of affected So they are having to sell a lot more players. So they are getting money coming in. But it's a strange, strange model. But they've got enough money, haven't they? So they can afford to make a loss for now. But can they do it for 10, 15, 20 years? No chance.
So, John, is this situation of big money being paid for players with 1 year left, is it going to continue?
I think so, yeah. I think it will for a few, for the minority.
So two things.
It seems to be working, doesn't it? Because clubs are able to justify it.
Yeah, I mean, two things need to happen. What players realise now is that their contracts have to be structured properly and they have to have a year or two left for them even to be able to leave.
Yeah.
Never mind anything else. And then the clubs interested in players are realising now that it doesn't make any difference how many years the player's got left. You may be able to get the player, but you're going to have to pay the same money as if the player was in a longer-term contract.
Yes, exactly. And it's still, it's interesting. Aaron Ramsey, wasn't it, when he left Arsenal 6 months, well, he left on the end of his contract, didn't he? He went to Juventus. You know, he got a fantastic signing on fee and also a fantastic salary. And we always felt that was like the perfect model in a way for a player to leave his club for the maximum gain. You know, 6 months before the end, I think he signed his contract with pre-contract with Juventus in January when he was allowed to. So it was all sorted. Fantastic move for him.
One of the last transfers that comes to mind where a player was bought for a very low transfer fee whilst in the last year of the contract was Robin van Persie. Went to a rival, which was Man United, for a relatively very small transfer fee. Now, if that was today and Robin van Persie was going with a year left, someone would still have to pay 70, 80 million for him.
Yeah.
But the psyche back then was, I think that Arsenal let him go for a very small transfer fee, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But I think it's the cost of recruitment, though, isn't it? It's all based on that cost of bringing someone else in. You know, the cost of bringing in a Van Persie, you might as well just keep him for another year and let him see out his contract.
But Arsenal decided that they might as well just get something for him. But Arsenal had a few situations. I think Fabregas had a year left on his contract and he went for a relatively low fee as well.
Yeah.
So the psyche's definitely changed. Yes. I don't know. It isn't as simple as there's more money in the game, because whether you've got more money or not, you still need to make good, solid business decisions.
Yes.
But spending a lot of money on a player with a year left seems interesting. Let's put it that way.
But I think it will continue, though.
It will continue. John, thank you for coming on the show.
No problem, Sky, anytime.
That was John Print. I'm Sky Andrew. Thank you for watching the 10% Club, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon.